Our last storyteller of the evening is, of course, Dick. Dick grew up in Red Cliff and Gilman, Colorado, and attended Western State College in Gunnison, Colorado. He served in the U.S. military from 1957 to 1960, stationed at Fort Carson, Colorado, and Fort Richardson, Alaska. He was a member of the U.S. biathlon team and competed in first and second World Biathlon Championships in Italy and Austria. Dick was on the 1960 U.S. Olympic biathlon team in Squaw Valley, California. Yeah. Dick has been involved in trail development in Anchorage from the 1950s to 2015, including the Arctic Valley Biathlon Trail Range, Russian Jack, Girdwood, Service, and many years at Kincaid. He was a Kincaid Project board member, helping build facilities, including 7 soccer fields, a world-class biathlon range, and the 3-kilometer snowmaking loop, and an 18-hole disc golf course. We are very grateful for all that he has done. Please welcome Dick Mize.
Thanks, Tamara. I guess you might say that I just came along at the right place in the right time and worked with a great number of people through the last 60 years that I've been here. Came up here in 1958 in the Army and was stationed out at Fort Rich with the biathlon team. And of course, we just graduated from college and had one of the best college coaches that you could ever have, Sven Week, at Western State. So we had a super program there. Coming to Fort Rich and then having our coach, Hans Wagner, a great fella, German, hard-nosed character that was going to get us in great shape so that we could compete with in the World Championships. And at Fort Rich, of course, we had the 9-mile trail that probably no one here has ever been around. And then we also trained at the Moose Run golf course. And of course, that's barely has just a few hills in it. And so in his training program, what he had us do as part of that is he gave us sledgehammers, and we'd go out to the motor pool, and they had these giant tires. And so we'd be standing there, and we would take these sledgehammers, and we'd pound on these tires for about 30 minutes, and that was part of his training. You can imagine there were 4 of us that were on the NCAA championship team, and coming in and getting this type of exercise, where most of our strength training came from gymnastics with Sven. So we decided that we said, Hans, how about talking to General Mudgett, seeing if we can go up to Arctic Valley and build a trail and a range up there where we can have some hills and some downhills that are comparable to what we're going to be facing in Italy and Germany. And Hans did. He went to General Mudgett. We got the approval. Hans came back, and we all sat there, and he said, there's only one condition. He said, you're going to have to do it all by hand. There's just axes and saws, and that's it. So we did clear a 250-meter range. We had our 250-meter targets, 200, 150, and 100-meter targets there with about 10 shooting points. And we also built the first part of the trail there. Sven Johansson, who was coached there with the biathlon team a little bit later, came in and improved what we had done and then added a little bit more. But thanks to Hans and his training program, the Arctic ski course and biathlon trails were built just because of those sledgehammers and tires. After I got out of the Army, went back to school, and then came back up to teach and coach at East High School, I found that we didn't really have any facilities to race on except Moose Run, which we had many races and with the club as well as the high school junior highs. And so fortunately, I talked with the Parks and Rec director at the time, and I also requested that perhaps we could go ahead and build a trail at Russian Jack, a 5-kilometer loop where we could have our high school and junior high ski races and have something for technique practice as well. Well, we went for several weeks, and winter was here, and nothing got done. And so Dr. Elizabeth Tower was a board member on the Parks and Rec Department, and we were going up the lift at Alyeska, and she said, how's the trail coming out at Russian Jack? And I said, well, we really been waiting and haven't gotten any approval from the city to do that yet. So the next day, I got a call from the Parks and Rec director and said, why did you go to the board, a board member, and talk about your trail? And I said, well, we were just a conversation. And so at any rate, we got approval to go ahead and build build the trail fairly quickly in that spring. And luckily, for I guess all of us, we had the help of the Nordic Club at that time, as well as the parents of East and Clark Junior High, to build the first part of the Russian Jack Trail. And of course, most of you who may or may not know the homesteader that homesteaded there back in 1930 was Jacob Marinick, and the Russian Jack Marinick. And it wasn't until 1948 that the city picked up the area there, and that's when they had the prison farm where the prisoners that were in good stead could go out and pick potatoes and grow potatoes and cabbages and all that kind of stuff. So at any rate, we took over the they thought it was a great idea just to make that a park for the city. And so that was the beginning of our trail building there. And of course, all the schools that were being built, they were fairly quickly. When I first started in 1961, West High was the only high school there. And then East High School, of course, came along, and along with that came the desire to have cross-country skiing as well as the alpine skiing in each of the high schools as well as the junior highs. So unfortunately, we had a lot of work to do in building trails for Service High School, which came along in 1971. We got that started, and then in 72 we began construction of the lake loop out at Kincaid Park. That was a real adventure. John Elliott and I cooked a Mother's Day breakfast for our family, and then started fixing locating and designing the trails there around Little Campbell Lake and the inner lake loop. And we got a little bit of a reception from the residents in the area that lived right close to there. Most of them were really pleased that we were building a trail there, but we had a couple of families that was really resentful. We were interrupting, and they had this little Campbell Lake where they took off every morning, went out for a nice swim, nice quiet place to be, and here comes a couple of guys with a cat building trails right next to the lake, upsetting them. And so we had a little bit of difficulty with some of the folks that were living there. But probably about as soon as we finished up the trails, we met this one lady that was so aggravated at us. And she said, you know, I'm really pleased that you guys finished up and built the trail here. That's really a nice place to be walking. And so that's the start of our Kincaid project group. And John and I went ahead the next summer and built another 12 kilometers of trail on the south side of the road there. And along with that part of it, I was principal at Diamond High School at the time. And I knew where the boundary was between the city and the military site. And I was on the CAT, and when I got to that one junction there where I knew we were just about ready to get onto the military site, I turned to John and I said, you know, I don't think it's going to be very good for me if a principal is in jail for going across this line and building a trail on military land. And John said, well, if you don't want to do it, I will. So he jumped in the CAT, and we took off and put in the trail ice box and the hairpin turns that come up to the hill. When we got to the top of the hill, we could take a look down at the Nike site. There's a double fence, guards walking back and forth, and we sat there and decided it's probably a pretty good idea for us to turn around here and head back the other direction. And we set up on the hill there, and I was wanting to go one way, and John was wanting to go a different way. And we finally decided, John, since he's on the CAT, he was going to go the way he wanted to go, whether I wanted to go that way or not. And we hurriedly built that part of the trail, put in the what later became known as Mises Folly, because John said if we had gone the way you wanted to go, it would have been a folly for everybody. you can perhaps, if you've been there, picture the highest point there, and you know what compression looks like if you've been around that part of it. Well, this would have been quite a bit faster than compression as you go down there. So anyway, that's how John gave it that name, because not because of the way it is, but because of the way it could have been. And coming down compression, we thought that, well, since we're still on military property, we better get out of here. We'll just go ahead and go down, and we'll come back and redo this part of it later, which we never did get that part of it done. So that's how the 6K and the old 4K got built at that time. And I guess the last part of it here is in the 1980s, we had the project that the 80s project, where we had some funds, and John and I were hired to build some of the trails there. The architects had trails that were to be built, but they were pretty straight. There wasn't any curves or anything in them. So they gave us the map and told us to go ahead and build what's now known as Elliott's Climb and Roller Coaster, and then a couple of trails over to the biathlon range. Well, we put in a few little curves in there, which they didn't really appreciate us varying a little bit from what they had drawn up. And then we also put in the two trails connectors that went over where the biathlon range is right now. Ran into a little difficulty there because we went out and around instead of straight down there, which meant that the city had to buy more lights and more cable and more of everything to get into that area. But had we done what they wanted us to do, we wouldn't have had an area now where we have one of the world-class biathlon ranges that we have. So we ran into a little bit of a few bumps and as we went along through all of the phases of our program, but I really feel very, very fortunate that I was able to be a part of that for the last 60 years, really. And then one last story, I guess, that I'd like to tell you, that a group of us were out there skiing one evening, training after work, and there was about six of us, and we were skiing up towards, if you know where Ellen Toll's bench is, there's a little downhill that comes down after that before you go into the culvert there. And we were skiing down fairly fast, and all of a sudden a great horned owl came down, and Bruce Talbot, for some reason, he picked Bruce out, and he came down and grabbed him right on the shoulders. And we got it stopped, and trying to pry that owl off of off of Bruce's shoulders was a real task. And Bruce, the only concern that he had, it was one of those evenings where it was below zero, and it was really, really pretty cold. Well, we had him down to his T-shirt, trying to get this thing off of him. We finally covered the owl's head with a jacket, and I put the ski pole under its talons, and it finally held on to those, and I set it aside so that we could get out of there. We took off, and we got down to the next hill to go down, and the darn thing took Bruce again and grabbed a hold of him. And I thought, I don't know if you know Dr. Scott or not, but he's one of our old-time veterinarians. And I thought, God, we're going to have to take Bruce and get him in the car, cover this thing up, and take him to Dr. Scott, because Bruce was determined that if we really pried too hard, we were going to hurt the owl. And so we really stripped him down again and finally got the owl off and got back onto the trail and finished up. But I don't think Bruce will ever forget that, and I know most of the people that were with us won't. So good times and all.